OWC Radio number 45, a really great conversation with Lynette Kent. Hey everyone, thanks for downloading this episode of OWC Radio number 45. I'm Tim Robertson, your host, and hey, did you know that Microsoft just released Office 2016? Is that crickets that I hear? I remember, and this wasn't very long ago, it seems to me, that Microsoft releasing a new version of Office for Mac was huge news. And yet, I didn't find it on hardly any websites out there. Just a cursory, this was just released. And that was it. Pretty odd. When did it change, I wonder? When that became not that big of a deal? Is it because it's the subscription model now, the Office 360? So that's a new version. You just download it. It's no big deal. Or are less people, or specifically less Apple users, using Office? Now, look, I have Office on my laptop. I don't use it very often, though. I have, you know, the entire Office suite. But, you know, if I'm writing, I usually use Pages, to be honest. If I want formatting, if it's just, you know, I'm writing something down quickly, it's TextEdit. Or, to be honest with you, when I'm doing show notes for OWC Radio, I actually use a Google Doc. That way those notes are wherever I'm at, whatever computer I'm at. If I'm in a hotel room or in the home studio or wherever I happen to be, my notes are always going to be there. And the nice part about using Google Docs is I can pull it up on my iPhone or my iPad. I don't have to have it on the computer screen. Because, quite honestly, when I'm recording a podcast like this one, I don't want too many open applications in the background. I think that's kind of a recipe for disaster. I use GarageBand, but I use an older version of GarageBand because the new version of GarageBand, it's really not all that podcast friendly, if you will. So I use a lot of other tools outside of Microsoft Office. Now, I don't do presentation stuff, so, you know, I don't need that aspect. I actually do some spreadsheet work, but I have numbers for that. Although, to be quite honest, numbers is not as good as Microsoft's product. It's just not. Excel is, I mean, it's Excel. It's the industry leader for a reason. It's not the most intuitive application of all time, and that's putting it mildly. But it works, and it pretty much does what people who need spreadsheets to do, it works. Now, Google Docs does have a spreadsheet, but it's not as good as Excel. It's just not. But still, I was surprised to see Microsoft releases a new version of Office 2016 for the Mac to very little fanfare. So I put the question to you. Do you still use Microsoft Office? If not, why not? Is there something else that you're using instead of Office? Do you just not need those kind of tools anymore? I'd really like to know, and I think other people would love to hear from you as well. So send us an email. Send me an email. Let me know, what are you using besides Microsoft Office? Or if you have an opinion on why it just wasn't that big of a deal, let me know that too. OWCRadio@MacSales.com is the email address. Best way to get a hold of us. Of course, you can always, you have to make it short, of course, but you can always post up on Twitter directly to us, @MacSales on Twitter. Let me know there. Really, really curious, because the last big version of Microsoft Office that came out made a lot of noise. I mean, it was posted everywhere. You couldn't escape the fact that there was a new version of Office. Not so much this time. So how are you liking Apple Music? I ask because, you know, we, at least in the United States and the UK, got 3 free months of Apple Music. I am curious on what you think about it. You know, the audio quality is fantastic. If you're into that type of music, Beats One, the radio station, is pretty cool. They don't usually play stuff that... Well, let me just say, it's geared towards a younger generation. And I think that's very important when it comes to a radio station of that sort, a 24-hour worldwide radio station. I think you have to kind of tailor it to that demographic, but I'm not that demographic, so as much as I've listened to it, which is honestly maybe 2 hours total throughout different times of the day and night, yeah, I got to say probably maybe half the music that they play is stuff I'm just not interested in. And that's probably true with, you know, traditional radio stations as well. I mean, there's a reason I don't listen to radio stations. But still, the question remains, what do you think of Apple Music? You know, the 3 free months, I've been debating whether I'm going to renew it or not, whether I'm going to continue with my Apple Music subscription. And to be quite honest, as it stands right now, my answer is probably going to be no. And right now, the main reason, to be honest, is I think the UI, the user interface, is, well, in my opinion, it's kind of a mess. And there seems to be, and here's the thing, I've heard conflicting reports on this from different people that I really trust. A really good friend of mine who actually works at Microsoft, I know I was just talking about them, he loves Apple Music, and he says the little heart for you playlist that it creates is spot on, and it's playing stuff that he hasn't heard in years, and he's really pleased with it. For me, it doesn't seem to be working at all, and it's playing stuff that why is it playing this? Is my first question. It doesn't seem to know what's in my iTunes library. It doesn't seem to look at the playlists that I already have. It doesn't look at, you know, for instance, iTunes tracks how many times you've listened to a certain song. You can actually set up a smart playlist and set it so it will show you your 50 most listened to songs. And then, of course, you can sort that by, you know, the top listened song at the top. And, you know, Apple Music doesn't seem to see any of that, because if it did, I think that the recommendations, the curated lists that it creates for you or for me would do a much better job. And it's just not. It's kind of a hot mess, in my opinion. So when I say I'm leaning towards not renewing it, I think that that's probably what's going to happen. I'm not going to renew it. I can't see myself paying $10 a month for limited usability for me. Now, this isn't an indictment of Apple Music in general, because it's working great for some people. Some people seem to be really, really happy with it. And I'm happy for them, but it's not working as well for me. So unless they upgrade it and change it and you know, make it better, in my opinion, then I'm probably not going to renew it. It might be one of those things that I jump in every, you know, 8 to 12 months and check out and see if it's something that I really like. And if it's not, well, then I just cancel my subscription again. And that's honestly the nice thing I do like about Apple Music, is you can subscribe for a short amount of time. You can subscribe for 1 month and get a, you know, $10 and check it out. And if you don't like it, eh, stop. And it's, I know, I really wanted to like it a lot more. A lot more. I mean, they said all the right things at the WWDC when they first talked about it. And I was really excited about it. In fact, I was probably more excited for Apple Music than anything else that they really announced at that event. It just hasn't lived up to the hype for me. Which, you know, I'm bummed out about. And I think because of the upgrade to Apple Music and the changes to Photos on both iOS and macOS 10, I get, I'm going to say pretty much every day, an email from Apple that says, my iCloud is just about full. I am using 4.8 gigabytes of my 5 gigabytes available. And that I can either go into my settings and change things and keep it under that minimum or that maximum, or I can buy more storage. I'm not buying more storage with iCloud. I am getting tired of the emails, though. I understand Apple is, in this regard, trying to help me. They're trying to let me know you're doing too much with the iCloud. And if you're going to do this much, you probably need to have more storage space. But Apple, you're only giving me 5 gigabytes to play with here. There's other services where I get a lot more. And I feel like if you're a Apple Music subscriber, shouldn't they automatically give you more storage space than iCloud? It's starting to feel a little bit like I'm getting nickel and dimed here. Oh, you like Apple Music? It's $10 a month. Oh, look, you're using more storage space on your iOS and Mac for iCloud? Well, that's this much more money a year. iTunes Match, you want all your music up in the cloud? Well, that's going to be $25 a year. You know, there's a lot of other services that offer a lot more storage capability for less. And I think Apple needs to get in line when it comes to that. Do you agree? Do you disagree? And of course, this is my personal opinion. And everyone has one. I'd like to know yours. Do you think it's starting to get a little bit nickeling and diming here? It does to me. It's unfortunate because I really wanted to like Apple Music more than I do. I really would love to use iCloud if it just worked a little bit better. And for what you pay, I just feel like you should get a lot more of it. I just don't feel like I should be nickel and dimed for using the software, which at this point is starting to become essential to Apple's products. It's no longer buy our computer. It's buy our computer and then pay for this extra and pay for this extra and pay for this extra and pay for this extra. Give me your opinion. OWCRadio@MacSales.com. Maybe I'm way off base. Maybe I'm on the fringe and most people don't look at it this way. And if that's the case, let me know, because I would like to know that. But that's just, again, my personal opinion. Here's something else that's my personal opinion. I think every computer within a few years is going to have the USB-C connection. Of course, Apple just came out with the MacBook, which has one port, and it's USB-C. And for some people, that's all they need. They plug in their charger to that one port, and they're good to go. But for a lot of people, one port just isn't enough. Well, OWC, we have a upcoming USB-C dock that's going to come out this fall. You can pre-order it now. Just go to MacSales.com. Excuse me, or go to the show notes for number 45, OWC Radio number 45, and you will see a link to our upcoming USB-C dock. Look, if you are serious about getting that new MacBook, you really will probably want to look at this dock. It kind of picks up exactly where that computer leaves off. And it's only $129 to pre-order it right now. So what do you get with this one dock? Well, how about HDMI? Pretty good, right? HDMI. Well, you get the USB-C plug, because that's what plugs into the MacBook. Oh, by the way, we have three different versions of this, so you can get one that color matches the MacBook that you currently own or you're thinking about buying. You know, when you go into a corporate environment, not every corporation has Wi-Fi. They have this thing called security, and they just don't want you accessing company records or company documents over a Wi-Fi network, even one that's password protected. They need you to be plugged into the network to ensure security. Well, how do you plug in this new MacBook with no Ethernet port? Well, with our dock taken care of. That's right, gigabit Ethernet built into the dock. Audio in, audio out, an SD card reader built in. You need more USB built in. So if you're considering one of the new MacBooks, and that one port is like, I don't know, that seems like a little less than I really need. The OWC USB-C dock, 129, arriving October 2015. Check it out. My conversation with Lynette Kent is coming up next. I think you're going to love, if you don't know who Lynette Kent is already, you're going to learn who she is on this conversation. She's fantastic. I think you're really going to like learning more about her. Of course, I'm going to have links to all of Lynette's websites in the show notes for, again, OWC Radio number 45. Simply go to blog.macsales.com. Scroll down a little bit. You'll see the OWC Radio link. And if you click that, it will show all of our past content. So not only this episode, but the 44 episodes that came before. So make sure you check it out. We try to not to make each episode timely. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but what I mean by that is I'd really like it so that you can go back and listen to any episode and it doesn't feel dated. It's still relevant to what's going on in the world today. Sometimes, like, you know, today I'm talking about Microsoft Office 2016. Yes, that's going to be dated 6 months from now. Talking about Apple Music, maybe there's a big upgrade, maybe they changed things, and my opinions that I express today doesn't really hold a candle to what's going on in the real world 6-8 months down the road. So in that regard, it's kind of a time capsule. But my conversations with people, those should never go out of style. And Lynette Kent is one of these people that, if you don't know who she is, you'll never forget her after this conversation. She's a fantastic person, a truly gifted photographer. She's been in the Mac scene, well, going way back to the 90s. So check out this conversation, and I will see you guys next week. Back here on OWC Radio. So, Normandy, France, New Zealand, the Southwest United States, Hawaii, Paris. I think my next guest should start taking me with her to places. Her name's Lynette Kent, and that's just some of the photo albums that I'm finding on her website, LynetteKent.com. Hello, Lynette.
Hi.
Boy, you go all over the place, don't you?
As much as I can right now. Trying to catch up for lost time.
Is there any one place that I didn't mention right there that you want to go to still and take pictures, because photography is your thing?
Well, I've already got plans to go to Scotland this fall and Italy, going back to France, which is basically like hometown. And then I think we're going back to New Zealand at some point. Galapagos, the Falklands, South Georgia Island.
So you have ambitious plans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have big ambitious plans. As long as I can keep walking, I'm going.
So, Lynette, like me, you are old school Mac. You've been around the Mac for a very long time. You've been writing about it for a very long time. And I love how you got started as a Mac user. Now, you were a teacher. And right. What kind of teacher were you?
I taught art at the high school and junior and what they call community college today level, yeah.
Junior college it was called back then.
Yeah, it was.
Way back in the 40s, right?
No. Not that far back.
Not that far back. So you were a teacher, and then you had a family, and things changed.
Right. So I was looking for something to do, and my brother was, who's the super geek of the family. He is the geek of the family, and he was creating a new company, which is still in existence today. And he said, draw my logo, because you can draw anything, but draw it with this. And he sent me down a used Mac SE 20, a little tiny box with a 9-inch black and white screen. And I tried to figure out how on earth do you draw with, his logo has a horse in it. How do you draw a horse with a mouse? And I played around. I got a hold of Illustrator 88, which the original, I think there was one before, but that was the one that was out, and tried to teach it to myself with the manual, and I think that was written for Uber Geeks, in my lap at 1 a.m.
Documentation has always been an issue when it comes to software, isn't it?
It's today is wonderful. Everybody doesn't know how good they have it with all the online videos.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. And so I tried to teach it to myself, and every time I came up with one of these super engineering-type answers, I was going, this is crazy. I've got to get some answers. And I had another application for, I think it was a virus protection, or I'm not sure what it was. I think it was Symantec. Maybe it was a type something or other. And they had a live human being tech support at night. And to me, this was like golden. And so I would wait till the kids were in bed and sit there and try to draw on this computer. And I'd call these guys at about 2 a.m. and they were always so good at answering my questions. And then I'd ask them, are they busy? And they're going, no, I'm bored.
And I'm 2 a.m, great. Lady, what do you expect? I'm bored. Thank God you called.
Yeah, they were West Coast. And course. And so they were very happy to talk geek stuff, and I would ask questions, and that's how I learned about how the Mac works, to me it was very foreign drawing with this thing, and I wanted to draw with an instrument that was more traditional. So first I tried figuring a way of, if I could get that drawing that I'd drawn on a piece of paper into the computer so that I could trace over it with vectors, which I learned about vectors with Illustrator 88. And so I had one of those old daisy wheel Mac printers, the original
dot matrix
one, the dot matrix that it looked like a typewriter without keys, and I found this gizmo gadget, which I have somebody on one of those guys, 2 a.m. suggested it, a little about $100 item, which you hooked up somehow. And then it was literally a scanner that would scan as you were turning the platen, in the printers, that it would bring it in somehow magically. And I tried using that. And then I was looking like crazy trying to go, you can't draw a horse with a mouse. And there was no control, and I started looking for drawing something, which today we call a Wacom tablet. Yep. And I found there were 3 companies that had them at the time, and I found all 3, and I went in and pled my case, and they gave me a sample. And I ended up with the Wacom. All 3 of them worked, sort of. And then Wacom came out with their better one, and that since then I've been a Wacom guru, and I've actually worked all the trade shows with them for since 1999, teaching people to use Wacom tablets.
They're fantastic tools, especially for artists. I mean, like you said, you can't draw with a mouse.
No, but it's beyond for artists. I mean, I don't even have a mouse. I have 4 computers, and there's a Wacom tablet hooked up to each one. I do everything. I scroll the web with my Wacom tablet. I'm incompetent with a mouse. I click on everything wrong, and I'm not very good with a trackpad either. I want my Wacom tablet and my pen. I find it very, very natural.
How are you with the iOS? Is that more natural for you, an iPhone or an iPad?
Well, that's you're touching stuff with your finger, right? But somehow it's not pointy enough. My fingers are rounded, and I keep hitting. I don't know how the kids type with their thumbs. I'm still typing with my index or my third finger.
Oh, I tell you, my 12-year-old and my 21-year-old, they can just go flying over that keyboard with thumbs. I don't know how they do it.
No, I know both my kids are adults, and they sit there and they can do it. But then they do it for their business. And my son's an attorney, and he actually runs a lot of his stuff right off of his iPhone 6 Plus. He got the big one because he has more to read.
But I'm the same way. I went with the Plus because, well, number one, my eyes are not what they used to be as a young man. And I just wanted a bigger screen for everything that I do on my phone. And I love my 6, but not everybody likes it. Like my wife, for instance, looks at my 6 Plus and goes, no way, it's way too big. She's very happy with the 5S. So, you know.
No, I like my 6. I have the 6. I think the 6 made some huge improvements. I'm looking for thin, lightweight, whatever. And it fits, you know, in my hand. It fits everything. The 6 Plus is great if you're going to do more. I don't do that much on the phone. You know, I don't text much, and it's just a phone to me with a more convenient.
Well, I'm struggling with that with the Apple Watch. I don't have one, and I'm trying to figure out why I need one, and I haven't come up with the answer yet.
Yeah, I don't wear watches much, so that probably is not going to be – that's one of the geeky things I will probably not have. Yeah. Unless there are – I did read that there were some fabulous health advantages. It can detect before you have a heart attack. So for old people, I think it's a great idea. The problem is you have to wear it.
And the problem is it is quite pricey still, and I don't think the price of those are going to go down anytime soon. Traditionally, Apple prices don't go down.
Well, when you think about what it's doing for you, it's an iPhone on your wrist. I don't see how they could bring down the price. I mean, there's a lot of technology and a lot of stuff in there. But like I said, I don't know. You know, if people wear watches regularly, yeah, it's a very cool item. But I take mine off. I don't wear a watch as much as I should, and I don't wear it when I'm drawing or working, so because it gets in my way. So
you were an early pioneer in digital pictures and scanning.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And
yes.
Where did that lead you?
I got hooked on the idea.
I assume, by the way, that you actually got the horse into the computer and he was happy.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. His company is maverickslabel.com, so he'll be thrilled with that. It's a wonderful company. It's all digital, and it's very fast turnaround, short run, long run, whatever labels. And he needed a horse, so drew a stylized horse for him. But that worked. And then I thought, you know, I think we're almost there. If I had a camera, I could take a photograph of something and get that digital. I don't even have to draw. Then I can draw from the photograph. It's even better. And so I started looking around at when they came out with the first digital cameras, and I read everything I could find. We didn't have the internet at the time. I was just reading every article I could get my hands on, and found that there were several brands, and I went to a Macworld conference up in San Francisco to evaluate the cameras.
So that had to have been an early Macworld.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't the earliest. It had to have been...
So it was digital cameras, I'm going to say 92, 93, somewhere in there?
Oh, no, I wasn't. Yeah, they had them, and we had a friend who had one. It was a Kodak, actually. It was a $800 Kodak that shot a 1.4 megapixel image that was giant pixelation or something. But it actually allowed you to get the image into the computer, which was kind of cool. But it was past that. I think it was – we were talking about a 2-megapixel camera, and it was – had to have been sometime after like 95, 96.
Yeah. The dark days of Apple.
Yeah, I had a Super Mac at one time too, so – it was the one I could afford.
Well, you know, the clones did a lot of good things when Apple wasn't. So,
yeah.
You know, I agree that with Steve Jobs that business had to go away. It was hurting Apple as a company.
Definitely.
But as a user, wow, I love the Power Computing, Power Tower 150s, and those are great machines, the UMaxes.
I can't remember what I had. I had a Super Mac is what I remember.
I think that was Motorola, wasn't it? Maybe not.
Could film. I don't remember.
It's been
remember.
So
it was,
long ago.
It's been so long. And but it was at one of those conferences, and I spotted these different cameras, and I had my list of specs, and it kind of goes to show you that you can't go by the spec. and especially something like a camera. So I went and I handheld each of the cameras and looked at the result. They had these little Mickey Mouse printers that they print out what their results were. And I happened over at the Epson booth where a gal was showing this Epson camera, which was not on my radar at all. It was smaller. It was actually less expensive. I looked at it and I went for the sales pitch. I said, give me your sales pitch. You know, let me hear what it's supposed to do. Well, she actually happened to have been the engineer who designed the camera.
So she knew.
She knew. And the capabilities were exactly what I wanted. And I started playing with it and I went, ooh, you can do this and you can do that. And for some reason, this little gadget with all these buttons, even though I can't work my iPhone with my thumbs, but for some reason the camera made sense to me, and I started bringing some friends over. You got to see this camera, and we hit it off, and she ended up having me work with her for all of the trade shows at the beginning of the digital camera, digital photography revolution. And
you know, Lynette, so far your story is one of someone who keeps falling backwards into things. You fell backwards into the logo design. You fell backwards into scanning, backwards into digital cameras. And how is that, you think?
You can call it backwards. I would call it falling forward because I'm looking at technology that's not there yet.
That's what I mean by backwards, that you're getting there way before anybody else, almost through a back channel that it's like nobody else is asking these questions. The company's putting out the products that the general public is still very ignorant about. And you're there way before everybody else.
Yeah, when you have a problem to solve, you look for answers. And today it's easy. You've got the internet. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You just go, thank God for Symantec's 24/7 live tech support. I would call them and ask questions. And somehow somebody there might know something. And you'd get this. I don't remember where I found all the specs on these cameras. Probably magazines or advertisements or something like that.
There were a lot
of
computer magazines back in the day.
Yes, there were.
Almost too many.
And that's probably where I got my information. And I'd, rip out the ads and look at this. And I go, ooh, it can do this, this, and this. This is what I want. So I ended up traveling with Epson at all of the trade shows from 1999 to about 2005. Which means that is when we went from the 2-megapixel camera and went up from there, and then Nikon and jumped in, and then Canon jumped in, and so that's I now have more money invested in my Canon cameras than I probably have in my cars.
And the car doesn't make you money.
No, but the car to me is something you drive to get somewhere where you use the camera.
There you go.
That's what it's for. And is it big enough? And no, I don't have small cars. I have the kind like SUVs and station wagons where you can put stuff in it because I have to carry all my camera gear. But I got completely hooked on this, and I had the good fortune of meeting some of the world's greatest photographers at these trade shows. And since I was working I wasn't working officially for them. I was a contractor working for the day, and I had access to the paper and the ink. So everybody was very nice to me, let's put it that way. And the photographer, so I got tons of information by doing that. And there are some fabulous photographers that were traditional photographers that jumped on the bandwagon of digital early enough to get their foothold in. And, I mean, they were great photographers. The principles are still the same. And so they have just simply adapted, and they're incredible photographers. And so I, follow them around and would learn from them. And you ask the right questions, and some of them are very, very good teachers. So if you ask the right questions, you get your answers, and you learn from that. So I've gotten completely into that. And then I, through one of the photographers, suggested to his publisher that I write a book. And I've ended up writing, I think I've written 9 published books on Photoshop Elements, on digital photography. And when they fell backwards, sometimes some author gave up at the last minute, they asked me to write one on the Mac operating system. And I wrote one on that, which was very difficult for me, not being a geek.
Yeah, I was going to say, your writing isn't from a technical standpoint. It's from an end user standpoint. And
exactly.
Maybe some people listening don't understand the difference between that. And so let me explain to them. Instead of just writing about the specs, which, let's be honest, is important to a point, but it's the user experience with the product and the end result of that product is much more important than whatever specs a product may have. You said, for instance, that the Epson camera didn't have all the specs that maybe some of the other ones did, but yet, at the end of the day, it was a better camera. It was the right solution for you. And your writing, yes, your reviews, your books, all was geared towards the end user, the person that's going to pluck down the money, potentially, to buy that product.
Right. Well, it's and, you know, from the manufacturer's point of view, it's... You can talk to the Uber geeks, as I call them, who go by the specs. As was, I thought at the origin, that's what I should be doing. But it can do this, it can do that. But does it do it easily, intuitively? You know, can you access that button? Do you need seven hands to hit all the buttons at the same time? The fact if something can do something, it's, in today's world, sometimes you have to hit three buttons at the same time. Can you do those things? Does it make sense?
So you didn't buy into the specs. You bought into the user experience.
Well, I found, and I when people ask me which camera should I buy, well, I make several suggestions according to their price point and what they want to do, and then I say go to a camera store and tell the sales guy these are the ones you want to look at, and hold them in your hand and try to get through the menus. If the menus make sense to you, that's the camera for you. If the menus are hard to access or you don't understand what they're saying, that's not the camera for you.
Isn't it amazing how bad the UI and cameras still are to this day?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, when you think about it, you've got a little 2.5 to 3 inch screen with a gazillion things of information to get into to get to the user. And so they have combinations of buttons. And that's kind of the way technology is. I mean, the people who make the things are engineers.
Right.
If the engineers are writing the books, the rest of us are not going to get
it. That's right. Absolutely. And that's been a problem with technology for a very long time, is that the people who know how to create these things generally are not the same people who are good at teaching others to use it. And they need someone, we need someone on both ends of that spectrum, like you, who could say, yes, this is a good product, no, this isn't a good product, and here's the reasons why. And it's increasingly important, I think, for the end user to have very unbiased, honest reviews and articles that say A, B, and C, and this is why. And unfortunately, in today's internet, you just get a lot of noise, I think. And there's a lot less people writing the reviews that the end user needs. I mean, if you just go to a message board for a company's product, all you see is complaints. And immediately you're going to think, or at least the layman's going to think, oh, this is a bad product. Look at how many people are complaining. Right. Well, those are just a very small number of people that are very vocal. That really doesn't mean anything.
That's
what people find. So they need people. We need people like you, Lynette, to tell us what we should be buying.
No, it's just what I would like to tell you is how to use it.
Yeah.
I think that's much more important. I also did write product reviews, but they were little tiny blurbs for a wonderful magazine called Design Tools Monthly. Jay Nelson was the editor. I wrote for him for probably 13 years, and it was a monthly magazine that simply told you what was out there, what was available, and if it was worth looking at, and gave you, in today's world, a link to go find it. And Jay shut down that magazine. He's publishing some books now. Yeah, it's about 2 years. And it was fantastic. It was design-oriented and Mac-oriented. But it just gave, you know, in the quickest amount of time, it did what all of those computer magazines did for me early on, whereas later all I would read is what he would write, and then I would write some product things for him. This is a product you should look at. If this is what you need to do, you know, do you need an external drive? Do you need this? Check these guys out. These are the ones that have been working for me, and here's why. And yeah, I was sorry to see that leave because it was a fun thing. And the December issue was always great because it had all this, you know, the gift yeah. suggestions. Everybody that wrote for them, there were about 7 or 8 people, would put their ideal list of things that they would like to have, which was a great place to go look for, you know, toys for the adults. But that was a very good magazine.
Well, they had a 21-year run. That's not bad.
Is that how long it was? Yeah. Wow.
Well, they started in 92 and they ended in 2013, so that'd be 21 yeah. years.
Wow.
That's a long time.
No, it was an amazing compilation of the essential things you needed to know on the product. So I would just look at the headlines. If it was something that I used, great. If it was something I was interested in, if not, I didn't even read. And the articles were so short, you could read the whole thing in less than a half an hour and really stay up to date. And I would probably contribute that Design Tools Monthly to keeping me up to date as well. But today we have the internet, and the trick with the internet is finding out what's real and what's not.
Yeah, a lot of vaporware out there.
Oh, I think the worst to me are the unboxing videos.
Oh, yes.
I can't believe anybody would, one, video themselves opening a box, and two, anybody would watch it. I'm looking, okay, get it out of the box, now tell me what you think of it. I mean, what are you using it for? You know, the unboxings are the most, I find them offensive. So I can't believe people ever did that. There are fewer today, thank goodness. But
they're out there.
That was, are they? Oh,
yeah, they're still out there.
But I think the internet's a wonderful tool for looking up something, but you can find so much misinformation. It's hard to discern, you know, what's real and what's not. I also, I'm an ACP for Adobe, and that means Adobe Community Professional, and I go online on the forums and try to answer some questions sometimes. And sometimes I look at some of these questions, and I go, where did they get this information that's totally incorrect? And they're irate because this is, they want to do this or they want to do that, and they're saying it's supposed to do this. And you sit there and go, where did you get this information? This is not what it does. Here is what it does. And, you know, sometimes they're mad because they read it somewhere else or they saw some ridiculous video on these, you know, tools that are supposed to do stuff and for you. Or the one I read recently was that Photoshop is supposed to take a photograph and turn it into a piece of art, and he can't do it. And he's missing that button. It's not well explained. And I wrote back. I wanted to write back. I was toned it down. There is no press here for art button. there is no such thing. If you want to create art, you have to do it. You can do it with a variety of tools. You have to learn how to use the tools, just like you would any traditional thing. Yeah, a modicum of talent would help too. But you can learn to draw without having the talent. You can learn. You'll never be as good as the ones that learn and have the talent. That's probably true. But you can learn to in your enjoyment. You can probably learn to even do something with it. But you have to have the tools, and you have to learn to use them. That's what art schools were about. You don't hand people a box of watercolor paint and said, go for it. You have to actually learn how to use
the techniques. You got to use the tools.
You have to learn to use the tools. You know?
But some of that, though, I think is on the end user's shoulders. They have to educate themselves on this is good information and this is bad information, instead of just taking the first thing that they find and taking it as gospel. I think that happens too much. The internet, like you said, is a wonderful tool. Of course it can be misused like any tool. It is really up to the user to find the good content, to find the truth out there, and not just the first thing that they find on Wikipedia and assume that that's the gospel.
Well, the hard part there is, if you are a novice at whatever project it is that you're trying to learn about, how do you know what's real and what's not? Mm-hmm. And it is very, very difficult. So that's why I think Adobe created their forums, which are, there's only certain people are allowed to answer. They're supposed to be educated in the tools. I think certain things like that. Canon runs live learning classes. So with my Canon camera, I can go on these live learning classes, and I'm learning from somebody that's actually trained or is a Canon professional to teach me. you know, if I went on some others, it's, you never know what you're watching.
Absolutely. And you've got to be careful on that kind of misinformation, because a lot of it, especially if it's a company run website, it's really designed to sell you a product.
True.
And so you do have to be careful about stuff like that. Now, Lynette is aware that we have our three random questions, and I have the three random questions ready. But before we get to that, I want to talk about the present a little bit. What are you doing now? What's occupying your mind and your activities?
Well, mostly I'm running around trying to get better and better and better with my cameras. And so I'm shooting a lot more. I actually sign up for a lot of photo workshops, and that's where I do some of the travels. And I find that to be a really good way of learning to photograph better. So you sign up with a photographer who's not only experienced in photography, but also knows the area. It's basically a photo guide and an instructor at the same time.
Yeah, I know someone that does that, Sean King.
I've heard the name. I don't think I have not been on any of his, but I know the name. I've gone with a fabulous photographer named Stephen Johnson. He's up in Northern California. He's fantastic. We've gone with Kevin Kubota, and we're going back with him. I found a photographer in New Zealand named Philip Bartlett. I lucked out there. I did the website search thing. I found a photographer who looked like he had a good project of where we were going to go, how he was running it, and I liked his images. Mm-hmm. And I took a blind chance and signed up with him. It was one of the best photo workshops I've ever been on, and I'm going to go back with him again in New Zealand. It was so much fun and so well done.
Do you pass this knowledge along to other people when you learn it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I should probably write a travel photographer's blog or something to get that info out. I'm doing the same this year in Scotland. I just looked, there are a lot of great photographers, and I thought, boy, this is going to be hard. And trying to figure out where to go, I found one that fit my time frame and the places I want to do, so we'll see how that turns out. And so I've been doing a lot of photographing, and then you know, I don't know, it's the lust for a new lens type of thing that happens. Some new lens comes out and you go, ooh, that would really be cool. So you rent it, you work with it for a little bit, and you go, luckily, sometimes you can't, some of them are either out of your price range, which is happens a lot, or with some of the long lenses, they are just literally too heavy for me to use. I'm 5'3". I had to hire a personal trainer to build up my arm strength so I could lift my cameras. that actually helps a lot. So I actually do that. I work out 3 days a week with a trainer so that I can increase my strength and then so that I can specifically lift my cameras. I love
that's it. That's amazing.
But that's been fun. But yeah, I've seen, so we go and we try to find places to go take pictures.
What do you like taking pictures of the most? Is it landscape? Is it buildings? Is it people? Is it, what is it that you're really looking for in that viewfinder?
Well, what I like landscapes, but fine art landscapes is really what I'm after. But sometimes you're traveling to a new area, you take the landscape because when you see that picture, it evokes the feeling that you had when you were there. And that's what I'm after, mm-hmm, for myself. You know, if I sell a few along the way, great, but that's it. But then I went to Africa and I took pictures of the animals, and I love the big cats. And
some
when
great
I go
photos,
back, look,
by the way, on your website of those, amazing.
The cats, yeah. I just, that's the part that got to me. And you know, and then the other day we were taking pictures in the what we call the Bolsa Chica. I'm in Southern California, and it's a wetlands. And it just looks like this marsh stuff next to the beach. But if you park your car and you walk back there, it looks like a camera store with the number of people that are there with their big lenses taking pictures. It's quite interesting. I didn't know what I was supposed to do because I'm looking around. They've all got lenses that are as tall as I am. And taking pictures of the birds, I don't know one bird from another. But then some of them, you know, are so graceful when they fly. It was real interesting. So I also found there's a great community there because these people are all helping each other.
Sure.
And, you know, I shoot with this, I shoot with that. And they give you ideas on how do you focus on this. I never take pictures of birds, so I thought, well, this is a difference. But it's a lot of exercise to do that. So it was kind of fun. I then went and visited a girlfriend in Arizona. She has horses, and they were a place where they actually train horses for different things. And I was up on some guy's truck with my tripod and my big lens, taking pictures of the horses and the trainers for the horses working the horses. And I just thought, wow, this is a challenge, just because obviously they don't hold still like landscapes.
No.
And
what's more interesting there, photographing the trainers or the horses themselves?
Well, they're when I say the trainers, they're actually the guy on the horse. The combination, where does each one sat slightly differently on the horse, and they were, I couldn't even tell you what they were doing. They do these things with they bring bulls out, and then they'd rope and catch them, and they pull the, you know, I guess the horse is supposed to cut off the bull, and so that you make it work. They're doing cowboy type work.
Right.
And that, what I thought was incredibly exciting. So you shoot, you know, 6,000 photos and end up with 3. But I'm told that's actually a good ratio, so it's kind of exciting. I thought that was really, you know, you want to get the one where the bull and the horse's hooves are in the same position and they're in a parallel thing.
Not easy.
Yeah. No, not easy, because you can't get in the pen with them. You have to be outside, right. And so...
So what do you tell people who are interested in photography, but they can't afford the really good DSLR cameras and the lenses, and really the only thing they're going to be able to use for the next year or two until they have that disposable income is their iPhone or a less expensive point-and-shoot? Do you have advice for those type of people?
Well, I've seen some amazing things with the iPhone. The iPhone, the only problem is you don't have the controls.
Right.
What I would say is actually there are some relatively affordable, they cost less than an iPhone, cameras. They're beyond a point and shoot. They have the controls. And learn the differences in I think it's the terminology that gets us. At the beginning, it's shutter speed, aperture, f-stop, which people get the words mixed up and they don't know what they're referring to. Learn those words. I would say join a camera club. There are, at least in Southern California, there are a lot of camera clubs, and I'm sure they're all over the place. Tell them you're a newbie. You'll find tons of people wanting to help you learn.
That's the thing I've noticed about a lot of communities, the Mac community, back when user groups were really, really big, video game communities, photography communities. When you show up and you're brand new and you just have an interest in it but you don't have any experience, I think a lot of people would be surprised at how many people will jump at the chance to help.
Yes, they do. They really. It's like when I was out there on the Bolsa Chica, several photographers were saying, oh, well, you point it this way and you do this and you do that. And I thought, wow, and I am experienced in the photography, but I didn't know how to do that specific thing. I had to wait for the bird to just do this, or, you know, they're wonderful people. Most people get involved in a hobby or a profession, and they're usually very willing to help you. Now, do they always have the right information? Some do, some don't. But within a photography club, you're probably going to get some very good info. I help lead a group called the Adobe Technology Exchange in Southern California. We have like 850 on our email list, but there's about 100 or so that show up at monthly meetings. But within that group, I'll teach. People have asked me to teach my backup class, because I figured out ways of setting up your backup system, since your photographs are now digital. And one of the advantages is you can make multiple copies, first generation of the negative, which we couldn't do with film. So I do a backup class, and you know, you have to find a way. You can't just stick it on a hard drive and plan that it'll be there in 10 years. Which it's not like putting your old negatives into a shoebox.
Right. We all remember that.
Oh yeah, we do that, but there are many methods of fixing it, and the main thing is like duplication with drives and stuff. So I teach this class, but in that room of anywhere between 50 and 100 people, there are several that I personally know a ton. They might be IT engineers. So when I hit on something and I can't explain it, one of them will step in and explain it to the crowd if it's, you know, more technical than I can do. Or on another basis, when they get too technical, I have to pull them down and you know, re-explain it the non-technical way.
Yep.
And so I do think those, you know, clubs, community groups, user groups are a wonderful asset to the end user.
And well worth exploring.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then whatever brand, if you're looking at cameras, whatever brand you're doing, there's – I wouldn't say go to a general website, but for example, if you buy a Canon camera, there are when I got my last camera, it was, even though I'd had the previous version of it, the new one was so much more complicated to understand how to use it. I actually went to their website and they had a whole series of videos from Canon that explained certain of the settings. They were still more technical than I needed, and I did have to get some help past that, but on a couple of them, but it gave me a basis. I love it that we were actually had taken a trip to Puerto Rico, and I'd just gotten this camera, and I spent 3 days in the room and never left because I was watching the videos on how to use this camera.
But it does go back to what I said earlier. The onus is still on you to learn what you can to wade through the misinformation, but it really does come down to educating yourself and putting the effort into educating yourself.
Right. And also knowing that there's one, no press here for art button, and there's no press here to get the best image in the world button. They're just, as great as the technology is, you still have to learn something. It's like anything else. You don't build a robot by, you know, just buying the box, or, you know, don't play Lego by just buying the box and setting it down. You have to figure out how to put the pieces together.
So, Lynette, are you ready for the three dreaded three random questions?
Go for
All
it.
All right.
Let's try.
Your first question is, if you could change something about your home without worrying about expense or mess, what would you do?
Oh, make it one level, not two story.
Yeah. Those stairs are a pain, huh?
They get to be, and the moving furniture around when you have stairs is more difficult.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's a good one.
No, actually, as a frustrated architect, I wouldn't have gone into art if I could have been an architect. Stop making so many nooks and crannies into spaces. More free flow, more open flowing rooms.
I think that they're doing that a lot with newer home construction. Older home construction, my parents' house, for instance. Oh, actually, my house was built in 1890. And,
oh, my.
There's just little spaces that you can't do anything with. They're dust collectors.
Right. Or there's so many twists in hallways to get to different things. Just open it up.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. That I think that's a big issue I always have.
Number two, have you ever had to wear a uniform?
Yeah. I went to a grammar school and a high school where we had to wear a uniform.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And then when I worked the trade shows, I worked both with the Wacom gang and the Epson gang, as I call them. And you're supposed to wear, in those days, we wore their shirt with black pants and black shoes.
Yeah, that's a uniform.
It's sort of a uniform.
Sure, absolutely.
But I understand the reason. At the trade shows, at least if you, when you're as the end user, you're going to ask a question, just don't go ask some random person standing there.
Yep.
Ask one of the people that has a shirt on.
Yep, absolutely. I do a lot of trade shows, obviously, for OWC. And, you know, especially the bigger shows, we have to wear an OWC shirt. Otherwise, you really wouldn't know who to talk to. And you want to make it as easy for the people attending the show to identify the people that are with OWC and can give you a straight answer.
Yes. Hopefully they can give you a straight answer.
Well, at least you didn't have to wear like a Taco Bell uniform or anything like that.
No, I've never done that.
Last one. What's one of the scariest things you've ever done? You've done a lot of things.
I think the scariest, but turned before I did it, was probably one of the scariest, was I wanted to go up in a helicopter to take pictures. And we were in Hawaii, and everybody always takes helicopter rides. But I kept thinking, I'd take a helicopter. And I'm uncomfortable on an airplane. And everybody said, helicopters are worse. They're more dangerous. I have not understood why. But ever since I did that one time, I've gone up twice since. I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of flying, but I'm comfortable in a helicopter. And I have not understood why. So sometimes you just got to find something you're really afraid to do and do it in a logical, controlled fashion and see if it really is that scary.
I like helicopters as well. I always thought before I rode in one, do you get that motion sensation? Do you get the floaty feel? No, it just feels like you're sitting in a chair.
Yeah, it's. I found it fascinating, mm-hmm. and I'm afraid of roller coasters. I won't go on those, and I really don't do well on a roller coaster at all. And yet, I can go up in the helicopter, and
I'm exactly the same way. I hate the. I don't know what it is. I don't like roller coasters. Tomorrow, as a for instance, I'm taking a day off, and me and the family are going up to an amusement park. And my wife and my youngest daughter loves the roller coasters. Not so much. I don't like them anymore. I never really did.
No, I never have either. I don't know. I do know that when I must have been about 10 years old, and there was this place that had a roller coaster, and my father took my brother and myself there, and my brother was a skinny little kid, and he had me sit on one end, and Dad sat on the other, and then my brother was right in the center. And it was the first time we were on this roller coaster. It was a big roller coaster. And when it, you know, how it climbs, the old style, it climbs, and get to the very top. At that point, my brother, who slipped right underneath the retainer bar, stood up and said, "I'm getting off."
Oh, my God.
My father screamed, "Grab him." And so we both were pulling down. That may have been the reason I don't like helicopters. I don't remember if I was 10 or 9 or something.
No, that would probably do it.
I have never liked them. Since so that's
a horrible story, Lynette.
Don't take little kids on roller coasters, no matter how much they want to go.
I think that might have been the scariest thing you've ever done.
Yeah, that could have been.
So where can people learn more information about you online?
LynetteKent.com, and wherever I also have a review page. It's called the Bag Lady Reviews, because I have a thing for camera bags and suitcases. I don't know why, but I know all the dimensions for the airlines and all the different manufacturers and which is best. And I call it Bag Lady Reviews.
I love that.
And I do write every now and then. I write some things on Lightroom. I named myself the Lightroom Diva after asking both the Lightroom Queen and the Photoshop Diva, who are very knowledgeable people, since they didn't take that name, would they mind if I took it? And so I have LightroomDiva.com, and I occasionally write little tips and tricks on Lightroom. I make suggestions to people where to learn it. When I read something from a teacher that I think is really great, then I will write that up. And so it's a resource for people. In other words, I'm not teaching them necessarily. I might write one on one topic, but I just make suggestions to where I think the best information is.
Well, I'm going to put this out here publicly, so anybody listening to this podcast is going to hear it. I think you have a fantastic voice, and you might want to look into podcasting one day, because I think you would be a natural in it.
That'd be great, except I don't know how to work these buttons and things.
Yeah, but when has that ever stopped you before? It's never stopped you before. You become an expert in everything that you didn't know how to do before, and then you got a passing interest in it, or a project came up, and then all of a sudden, Lynette Kent is the person you go to with your questions.
Well, I guess I learned.
There you go. That's very important, and that comes from being a teacher, I think.
I think so.
Thank you very much for being on this episode of OWC Radio, and we'll talk to you soon, Lynette.
All right. Thank you.